So whenever you buy auto or, property insurance, there is this massive, completely invisible digital engine that's just making sure you're actually covered.
Right, yeah. It's just running constantly in the background.
Exactly. You don't see it, you don't really interact with it directly at all, but it takes all the messy, unpredictable reality of human life, like, buying a new house or adding a teenager to your car policy or starting a business, and it translates all of that into highly structured, queryable software.
Which is honestly a massive undertaking when you think about the sheer volume of data.
Oh, absolutely. So today we are basically cracking open the hood of that exact engine to look at the Guidewire PolicyCenter data model. We've got this really extensive guide on the best Guidewire PolicyCenter data model course in 2026, and that's our source material for today.
Yeah, and to be clear, we aren't here to just, list off database tables or recite Java code today. That would be incredibly dry.
Yeah, nobody wants that.
Right. We are looking at the metadata-driven brain that powers global property and casualty insurance operations.
Yeah.
In Guidewire, the data model isn't some secondary infrastructure that you figure out after you master the
Right.
user interface.
Right. It's the foundation.
Exactly. It is the absolute core. The GOSU business rules that calculate your premiums, the UI screens that the underwriter actually looks at,
Yeah.
the REST APIs communicating with external vendors. I mean, every single piece of this platform reads from and writes to this specific architectural blueprint.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, if you don't understand the model, you fundamentally cannot understand the system. It's that simple.
Okay, let's unpack this because, calling it a metadata-driven brain implies it operates pretty differently than like a traditional application where developers just write SQL scripts to build out a relational database.
It operates entirely differently, yeah.
It sounds like the system is almost abstracting the database layer entirely.
That is precisely what it does. Guidewire doesn't hard code a fixed database schema. Instead, the architecture relies heavily on these metadata files.
So no traditional SQL setup at all.
Right. Developers define entities using what are called .eti files. And because the system is built on an object-oriented paradigm, these entities, they fully support inheritance right at the metadata level.
Okay, wait. Inheritance at the metadata level, what does that actually look like in practice?
So you define a base entity, right, like a contact, and then you create specialized subtypes, like a person or company.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and they just inherit the parent's traits while adding their own specific fields. So a company might have a tax ID field while a person has a last name, but they both share the basic contact field, like an address.
Okay, so the developer is working purely with these .eti metadata files. It's almost like feeding a 3D printer a really lightweight CAD file.
I like that. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
Because instead of builders manually pouring the concrete and, laying the bricks, the blueprint itself is processed at compile time to automatically manifest the heavy physical structures. Like you write the ETI file, and the platform just magically generates the Java classes, the GOSU classes, and the physical database tables completely on the fly.
What's fascinating here is the sheer elegance of that compilation process.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. By generating the physical schema directly from the metadata blueprints, the platform guarantees that the object model that developers are manipulating in the code is always, always perfectly synchronized with the underlying database.
So there's no mismatch ever.
Exactly. There is zero drift. And this abstraction extends to how data mutations are handled at runtime, too. They do this through their proprietary object relational persistence framework, utilizing what they call a bundle.
Okay, a bundle. And a bundle basically acts as a transactional memory space, right?
You got it. So
Yeah.
rather than writing manual insert or update queries every single time a user clicks a button, the system is just holding that state in memory. It's exactly right. Think about when a developer or an underwriter needs to modify a really complex object graph, say, a commercial policy with hundreds of associated vehicles and different coverages.
Right, something massive.
Right.
Yeah.
They load those objects into memory. And as they navigate through various UI screens making all their changes, the framework is just quietly tracking every single delta within a bundle.
So it's waiting until they're totally done.
Exactly. When the workflow reaches a completion point, the framework executes a single atomic commit to the database. It handles all the complex topological sorting of foreign keys and arrays behind the scenes.
Wow, so referential integrity is just baked in.
Yes, ensuring referential integrity without the developer writing even a single line of SQL.
That is incredibly slick, and I assume that prevents the classic problem of like dirty reads or orphaned records if a transaction happens to fail halfway through a really complex policy issuance?
Precisely. It's all or nothing.
Right. So we have these main entities, accounts, policies, policy periods, and they act as the core nodes in the object graph. But to maintain data integrity across the UI, I read it that the platform uses type lists, which are essentially like controlled vocabularies defined in XML, right? To populate things like policy status or gender.
Yes, type lists are a huge part of this. And managing those type lists effectively is critical because you really don't want developers writing hard-coded conditional logic in the UI layer just to determine which drop-down options to display to the user.
Right. That sounds like a nightmare to maintain.
It really is. So instead, the data model utilizes type list categories.
Oh, categories. Okay.
Yeah. For example, if an insurer offers a specific highly specialized coverage, the metadata categorizes it so it inherently only appears for, say, a commercial property line.
Ah, so it completely hides it from the personal auto UI automatically.
Exactly. The logic lives in the data model, not the screen.
Which obviously keeps the application layer super clean. But, you know, having a pristine, automatically generated database schema is really only half the battle here.
Right, because things change.
Exactly. Insurance isn't just a static snapshot. An underwriter binds a policy, but then reality intervenes. People move across state lines. They swap out a sensible sedan for a sports car mid-year. They change their liability limits. The data model has to map to a dynamic timeline, doesn't it?
It does. It absolutely has to. And this brings us to what I consider the absolute centerpiece of the entire architecture.
Which is?
Effective dating.
Okay. Effective dating.
Right. Policies evolve, and those evolutionary steps must be tracked with microscopic precision. Mm. Policy Center does not simply, you know, update a row in a database when a change occurs. Mm-hmm. It stores time-aware versions of key entities.
Here's where it gets really interesting because, okay, if I call my agent to add comprehensive coverage to my vehicle on, let's say, July 1st.
Okay, July 1st.
A traditional CRED application create, read, update, delete, it would just execute an UPDate statement on my vehicle record. The old data is gone.
Right, overwritten.
But if Policy Center is time aware, it's not overwriting the old file. Is it essentially functioning as like a time machine that lets the system travel back and reconstruct the exact state of my policy on any random Tuesday?
A time machine is the perfect mental model. Honestly, yeah. That's exactly what it is. Every mutation is anchored to the exact date it takes effect. The architecture manages this through three main concepts. Branches, slices, and windows.
Okay, break those down for me. Let's start with branches.
Sure. So when you initiate that midterm endorsement to add your comprehensive coverage, the system creates a branch. This is an isolated line of change. An underwriter can quote it, modify it, evaluate the risk, all without impacting the currently bound policy.
Oh, I see. So it's sort of pending until they finalize it.
Exactly. Until the branch is officially promoted.
Okay, so that's the branch. And how do slices operate within that branch?
The slice represents the absolute state of your policy as of one specific microsecond.
Microsecond, really?
Literally down to the millisecond in the database, yes. If an underwriter queries the system to see your policy on June 15th, which is before you made your July 1st change, the platform dynamically slices the version history. It returns the object graph exactly as it existed on that specific day.
That is wild. Okay, and what about windows?
Conversely, a window is the span of time between two effective dates where a specific set of values applies.
Like from July 1st until my policy renews on December 31st.
Exactly. That's a window. And all of this chronological mapping, all this time travel logic, it's anchored to a primary entity called the policy period.
Right. I saw that in the course material.
Yeah. The policy period acts as the definitive container for a specific term of coverage, like your standard 12-month auto policy. Everything hangs off that period.
But to achieve that, I mean, the database must be doing some incredible heavy lifting under the hood.
Oh, it is.
Because when I make that July 1st change, the database is physically splitting the existing row, right? It's terminating the old record's effective window on June 30th and inserting a brand new row that becomes effective July 1st.
That is exactly what happens.
But it begs the question, why engineer such massive overhead? Why not just maintain a current state record like a normal app and just dump the historical changes into a lightweight audit log?
That is the million-dollar question. And the answer is because an audit log cannot easily be queried by a complex business rules engine.
Oh, okay.
In the insurance domain, the past is highly actionable. Let's look at the life cycle of a claim. So you added that comprehensive coverage on July 1st, right?
Yep.
Now imagine in mid-August, the claims department receives a first notice of loss. You're cloning a severe hailstorm, severely damaged your car. back on May 20th.
Ah, I see where this is going. The date of loss precedes the endorsement.
Precisely. The loss happened before you bought the coverage. Now, if the platform relied on a flat current state architecture, the claim system would ping the policy database and see what?
It would see that I currently have comprehensive coverage.
Right. And it might potentially authorize a massive payout for your car, but you didn't actually hold that coverage when the storm hit.
Wow. Okay. That's a huge problem.
The claims adjudication engine does not care what your policy looks like today. It requires a perfectly instantiated object graph of your policy exactly as it existed on May 20th.
So the effective dating guarantees that midterm edits and like backdated endorsements never destroy the historical truth.
Exactly. It completely prevents that kind of catastrophic financial leakage.
That makes total sense. So we're looking at an architecture that compiles its own physical schema and operates as this immutable chronological ledger.
Right.
Naturally, massive enterprise carriers are going to heavily customize this out-of-the-box software, right, to fit their bespoke underwriting models. But how do you tinker with an engine this complex without just completely compromising its integrity?
Well, you have to be very careful. You do it by strictly adhering to what Guidewire calls the upgrade safe path.
The upgrade safe path.
Yeah.
Okay.
The fundamental rule, and I mean the golden rule of modifying the Guidewire data model, is that you never, under any circumstances, alter the base entity definitions provided by the vendor.
Never.
Never. You do not touch the core account or the policy.eti files.
Okay, I have to push back here. Let's look at this from the perspective of like a chief information officer at a global tier one carrier.
Fair enough.
They are spending tens of millions of dollars licensing and deploying this platform.
Duelist, yes.
Right. And if their actuarial team demands a highly specific data structure, say they want to track a proprietary customer loyalty tier to drive some algorithmic pricing model, why shouldn't their engineering teams just rewrite the base code to fit their bespoke needs? I mean, it's their environment. Why deal with the overhead of a rigid extension framework?
I hear that argument a lot. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, ignoring that rigid framework is the fastest way to accumulate paralyzing technical debt.
Paralyzing. How so?
Yeah. Let's play out your scenario. Let's say your engineering team rips into the base code and fundamentally alters the core policy entity. They hard code the new actuarial logic, they deploy it, and it works flawlessly in production.
Great. The business is happy. The actuaries have their data. Win-win.
Right. They are ecstatic for exactly 3 years.
Uh-oh.
Then Guidewire releases a major platform update. Let's say they're moving from an on-premise model to a Guidewire cloud, introducing critical security protocols, new REST APIs, native AI integrations, all the good stuff.
Right. You want that update.
You need that update. Yeah. So your team attempts to pull it down. The update script looks for the standard architectural foundation to build upon, but it encounters your heavily mutated base code.
It doesn't recognize the structure anymore.
Exactly. The update fails catastrophically. The entire system is bricked.
So you're basically trapped on a legacy version.
You are permanently stranded. And in enterprise software, being stranded is a death sentence. By strictly using the extension framework instead, like adding that loyalty tier field via a .etx extension file.
ETX meaning entity extension.
Exactly. Or adding a new coverage option via a .tts type list extension. By doing that, you isolate your customizations.
Oh, I get it. So they sit separate from the core.
Right. When the vendor pushes a core software update, the foundation upgrades cleanly underneath, and your .etx extensions simply recompile and sit safely on top of the new architecture.
It's all about preserving agility then. You build the customizations modularly so the core engine can still be swapped out and upgraded.
Exactly.
Okay, but as these carriers scale, managing the performance of this database must become a serious engineering challenge, right? The source materials really emphasize that because effective dating actively multiplies the number of rows in the database, like splitting records every time a policy is endorsed, these tables must become incredibly dense.
Oh, the tables become massive.
Yeah.
Performance optimization requires highly, highly disciplined data modeling. You have to be incredibly judicious about how objects are loaded into the JVM memory.
Because you can't just load everything.
No, absolutely not. You don't pull a massive web of historical policy versions into memory if the UI only needs to display the current slice.
And I imagine database indexing becomes a delicate balancing act, too. You naturally want to index columns that the UI queries frequently just to speed up those read times.
Right, but you have to be careful.
Because In an effective dated architecture, a single batch renewal process might split and insert hundreds of thousands of rows simultaneously, right?
Yes, exactly.
So if you over-index those write-heavy tables, you'll severely throttle the persistence framework, because the database is spending more time updating the index trees than writing the actual data.
You hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Which is also why the architectural guidelines mandate strict cascading delete behaviors.
Cascading deletes.
Yeah, so we established earlier that entities own other entities, right?
Like a policy period owning an array of coverages?
Exactly, or vehicles.
Mm.
If a temporary branch is discarded by an underwriter, or a parent object is purged, the data model automatically cascades that deletion down to every single child object.
Oh, so it cleans up after itself?
It has to. Without those cascading rules, the database would just quickly drown in orphaned historical data that isn't actually anchored to a valid policy term anymore.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
So we have a perfectly customized, upgrade-safe, highly optimized chronological database. But, you know, a policy administration system does not exist in a vacuum.
Definitely not.
It is the central nervous system of a huge enterprise ecosystem. It has to feed financial data to the general ledger. It has to send documents to third-party printing vendors. It has to synchronize with downstream analytics data lakes. The ripple effect of data moving in and out of this model is just massive.
It is, and the integration architecture has evolved significantly over the years just to handle that ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, external systems interacted with the data model through point-to-point SOAP web services.
Oh, right, exchanging those really heavy XML payloads.
Yeah, lots of overhead. But as carriers migrate to Guidewire Cloud, the integration standard has shifted entirely to a highly robust suite of REST APIs.
The Guidewire Cloud API, right?
Correct. It allows external applications to read and write to the data model, using much more lightweight JSON payloads.
Mm.
It basically treats the platform as an API-first microservices engine.
That's a huge shift.
It is. But honestly, the most transformative shift is the move toward event-driven architectures.
You're talking about streaming entity changes, aren't you?
Yes, exactly.
Because instead of downstream systems constantly pulling the database, you know, pinging it every 5 minutes, asking, hey, did policy 123 renew yet? The data model now actively pushes state changes outward.
Right. Polling is incredibly inefficient.
So it uses distributed event streaming platforms like Apache Kafka.
Yes. When a transaction commits, the system publishes a serialized representation of that event straight to a Kafka topic.
So any external system billing, analytics, whatever, just subscribes to that river of data. They ingest the updates in real time, and it puts zero polling load on the transactional database.
That event-driven paradigm is absolutely critical for performance at scale. But to truly understand the genius of this data model, we actually have to look at the internal integration between Guidewire's own flagship products.
You mean Policy Center and Claim Center?
Exactly.
Okay, this is a fascinating architectural contrast to me. Because they are built on the exact same underlying platform, they use the exact same .eti framework.
Right.
But they serve fundamentally opposed mindsets. Like, Policy Center is obsessed with managing sprawling expanses of time. It deals in effective dates, branches, annual terms.
Yes, it's very time anchored.
But Claim Center operates on a totally different axis. It manages sudden, violent reality. A car crashes, a pipe bursts, a roof caves in. Claim Center is entirely event anchored. It manages discrete transactions like reserve calculations, payment issuances, subrogation demands. It is hyper focused on the exact moment of impact.
This raises an important question, doesn't it? How do you seamlessly integrate two massive systems when one is built to track slow evolution and the other is built to manage chaotic, instantaneous events?
Right, because if I'm stranded on the side of the highway after a collision, the claims adjuster taking my first notice of loss, they do not care about the complex branching history of my policy over the last 6 months. They just need to know instantly if I have rental car reimbursement active on this specific vehicle.
Exactly. And that instant verification, that relies completely on the time machine we talked about.
Okay. How does that work in real time?
When the claims adjuster creates the FNOL, the first notice of loss in Claim Center, they input the date of loss. Claim Center immediately fires a REST API call right across the enterprise network over to Policy Center.
Passing that specific date of loss as a parameter.
Yes. And Policy Center's effective dated engine catches that request. It traverses the object graph, identifies the correct branch, extracts the precise slice of data that was active on that exact day, and serializes it right back to Claim Center.
Wow. The event-anchored system instantly consumes the time-anchored reality.
It is a flawless architectural handoff.
Yeah.
Claim Center takes that slice and actually instantiates a read-only replica of the policy data within its own database.
Oh, locking it in place.
Locking it in place. So the claim adjudication is forever tied to the exact coverage limits that existed when the metal bent. It is really a masterclass in enterprise data exchange.
That is incredible. So what does this all mean for the engineers who are actually building these systems? We've covered the metadata compilation, the chronological ledger, the upgrade safety, and all these streaming integrations. Why is deep fluency in this specific data model so insanely valuable in the current tech market?
The demand curve right now is just staggering. We are witnessing a massive global modernization cycle.
Really across the board.
Right? Oh, yeah. Tier one property and casualty carriers are finally retiring these decades-old brittle mainframe systems. And they're migrating to Guidewire Cloud en masse.
And this transformation is driving massive hiring sprees across global tech hubs, particularly in India, from what the source material highlights.
Oh, absolutely. The Indian market is practically the epicenter of this talent demand right now.
Yeah, you have the domestic regulator, IRDAI, aggressively pushing for digital transformation within Indian insurers. But then, simultaneously, the massive export-oriented consulting sector is managing the cloud migrations for carriers in North America and Europe.
Right, the global heavyweights.
Yeah, companies like Accenture, Cognizant, Capgemini, TCS, Deloitte, LTMI, and Tree. They're all running multi-year, multi-million-dollar Guidewire practices.
And let me tell you, they are aggressively hunting for a very specific type of hybrid talent to staff those projects.
And the compensation bands totally reflect that scarcity. If you look at the current metrics, a fresher entering the ecosystem is looking at like 4 to 7 lakhs annually.
Which is a solid starting point.
Right. And by mid-level, around 3 to 5 years, that jumps to 8 to 15 lakhs. Senior developers command between 16 and 28 lakhs. But the leap to architect, that is where it gets exponential. We are talking 40 to 70 lakhs plus.
That massive premium for architects exists because you cannot fake your way through this platform with generic IT skills. You just can't.
Right. It's not enough to just know how to code.
Exactly. A standard full-stack developer knows Java, SQL, and REST APIs.
Yeah.
But to succeed here, you need deep proficiency in Gosu, which is Guidewire's proprietary JVM language that's optimized specifically for insurance rules.
And you need to understand Kafka streaming.
Kafka, XML, and JSON payloads, and Kubernetes for the cloud deployments.
But even technical brilliance isn't enough, is it? You have to internalize hardcore insurance domain knowledge.
That is the real differentiator.
Because you can't design an effective dated object graph if you don't intuitively understand the difference between, say, a policy line and an aggregate coverage limit, or how a backdated endorsement impacts premium accounting.
That intersection of domain expertise and technical architecture is exactly why mastering the data model is the ultimate career accelerator. It is the dividing line in the industry.
The ultimate cheat code.
Basically, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A mid-level developer who doesn't understand the model.
Yeah.
They just pull tickets off a Jira board, write the Gosu code to move a button on a screen, and move on. Their value is strictly capped.
But the architect.
But an architect understands the underlying .eti blueprint. They understand how a change to a foreign key relationship cascades through the effective data database and impacts the JSON payload being streamed out via Kafka.
So they stop seeing the platform as a black box that just magically saves data, and they start seeing the underlying physics of the system.
Precisely. They transition from just writing code to actually designing the very time machine logic that runs the enterprise.
You become the engineer who prevents the entire cloud upgrade from failing 3 years down the line because you correctly utilize the extension framework.
And that level of systems thinking is what commands the 70 lakh salary.
Okay, let's take a breath and recap the architectural journey we just took.
It was quite a journey.
It really was. We started with a metadata-driven blueprint that acts like a CAD file, automatically generating and synchronizing a complex physical database without anyone having to write manual SQL. Then we explored how the platform functions as an immutable time machine through effective dating. We unpacked the upgrade safe path, demonstrating how disciplined use of extension files prevents catastrophic technical debt.
And we looked at how it all connect.
Exactly. Yeah. We examine the modern integration layer, shifting from point-to-point polling to Kafka event streaming. And we detailed that incredibly seamless handoff between Policy Center and Claim Center. And finally, we saw why this intersection of deep tech and insurance domain logic is creating such a lucrative landscape for systems architects.
It truly is a remarkable piece of software engineering when you step back and look at it. It illustrates how the abstract chaos of human life, car crashes, new businesses, changing addresses can be captured, categorized, and managed by a rigorous logical framework.
Absolutely. If you're sitting at the keyboard right now, whether you're prepping for a technical interview at Capgemini or designing the architecture for a tier one carrier, understanding this data model isn't just about learning proprietary software. It's about understanding how we mathematically structure reality to absorb risk.
And as we look toward the next evolution of this architecture, there's a fascinating paradigm shift on the horizon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Currently, Guidewire's effective dated data model is the ultimate historian.
Right.
Through its complex slicing and branching, it perfectly captures the past and the present.
Right, the time machine.
But as carriers deeply integrate predictive artificial intelligence with these pristine, time-aware data sets, the mechanics of the system will change. What happens when the data model is no longer just a passive ledger, but starts generating future slices?
Wow, okay.
What happens to the insurance industry when this digital engine leverages AI to actively branch your policy and predict your next life event, adjusting your coverage risk before you even pick up the phone?
A time machine that doesn't just accurately reconstruct the past, but begins to computationally model the future. That is a wild thought. The invisible engine running in the background is only going to get smarter, isn't it? Well, thank you for joining us as we cracked open the architecture today. Keep questioning the systems running behind the scenes, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.